Welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charlemont Borough Council. Happy New Year, everyone, too. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent and ensure that your environment is distraction free. Thank you. This meeting of the Scrutiny Commission is being held as a hybrid meeting with some participants joining the meeting virtually. I will now ask those members if they can see and hear the meeting. We've got Councillor Nat Taylor with us online. Councillor Taylor, can you just confirm you can see and hear us, please?
Yeah, I can see and hear you.
Lovely, thank you. So if we start with the agenda items, so we've got item one is apologies. Have we got any apologies, Sally?
We've had no apologies, Chair.
No, thank you. So item two, we've got minutes of the previous meeting. Are we all happy with the minutes from the last meeting in December?
Yep.
Yep. You're all happy for me to sign. Councillor Lenny?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll sign those at the end. Item three, so we've got disclosures of pecuniary interests and other registrable and non-registrable interests. We got anything? Oh, thank you. So item four, declarations of the party whip. I'm not aware of any. And item five, questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16. We've not had any questions submitted this evening. Item six, pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet. We've not got any of those this evening either. Item seven is Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. So we've got the following items have been identified for pre-decision scrutiny from the Cabinet agenda for the 16th of January 2025. So item 7A is the English devolution white paper. So we've got Rob Mitchell, Chief Exec, with us today. We've got Helen Gresson, Head of Transformation, Strategy and Performance, and Councillor Meir, Leader of the Council, with us. Leader, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I can do. I was going to hand over to Rob to present the report, and then I'm happy to answer any questions, because I remember there's lots to go through, happy to answer any questions after the report's been presented.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leader. Thank you, Chair. So, you'll have noticed it was a to-follow item, so apologies it's come to you a bit late, but it was unavoidable given that the white paper was published on the 16th of December, which obviously it has a lot contained within it, so there's a lot to digest. Christmas, New Year in between, and then flooding as of the first week back. So we got it out as quickly as we could on Friday, but we're here and can answer any questions you have. The report's split into a couple of sections, so there's a brief summary of the contents of the white paper, or certainly the main thrusts of it around devolution and local government reorganisation, but it is worth noting that the white paper is much broader than that and includes things relating to member standards and so on. So there are elements of the white paper that we'll need to come back to as a council once we've fully understood some of the other aspects of the white paper, but the most immediate issues in front of us relate to devolution and local government reorganisation. So without trying to sort of repeat what's in the report, I just thought I'd bring a couple of matters to your attention, really, which is that the government is expecting areas to follow devolution and the creation of new strategic authorities, and that will be a new term which will also include the existing devolution deals that have been done across the country. So they've set out a new framework which includes the creation of different types of strategic authority, but the implication really is that they want everywhere to achieve a mayoral strategic authority as soon as is possible, and that's the one that sets out the transfer of certain powers from government to that strategic authority. So that's their first and foremost aim, but it is now inextricably linked really with local government reorganisation, and whilst not mandatory, there is a clear direction of travel to try and move the 21 county areas that remain in the country to a process of unitary government and remove the current county and district and borough councils and replace them with new unitaries. So the exact relationship between those two things is not always immediately apparent in the report, and we are or in the white paper even, we are awaiting a letter from government at the end of January, which will go to all of those councils in those 21 areas, asking them to express an interest. However, as you can imagine, things have been moving along at pace since this white paper was released, and the leader has been involved in numerous meetings with the county, city, and more particularly the other districts and Rutland County Council as well, to try and understand what this means. In terms of devolution, I think it's clear that there is a good deal of consensus between all of the districts, the boroughs, Rutland County and City, that we should be aiming for a strategic authority that covers Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, with a mayor leading that new strategic authority and seeking to have the full suite of devolution powers to that new mayor structure. So that will need to be proposed and some details put forward. That's mainly in the gift of the upper tier local authorities, so districts are not so involved in that, but we're clearly entitled to a view on it, and the government encourages those upper tier local authorities to engage with us in that process. What's less clear is exactly what form of local government reorganisation would occur underneath that, and there have been discussions between partners and with government about what that might look like. And what we've sought to do in the paper is to give you the most current situation, but it is evolving, it is moving, so you know, we'll need to make sure that we keep members updated as this progresses. At the moment, the broad position, which is apparent from information provided by the county council, is that they would like to see a single unitary council for the Leicestershire and Rutland area with an expanded city as part of a new unitary structure underneath that mayoral authority covering Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland. The paper goes on to say there are some concerns about that with, you know, from Charnwood Borough Council, but also from some of the other districts and Rutland as well, about the size and scale of that and how well connected it would be to local communities in what is quite a large and diverse area. If you look at the sort of scale and scope of existing unitaries, if we were a unitary, we'd be about 40th in terms of size already at 180 something thousand people, so quite a lot of unitaries, that's out of about 60. So actually, you know, unitaries are not always over that 500k size. So there is still some discussion to be had, I think, about the size and scale and nature of the local government reorganisation underneath that strategic authority. So districts and Rutland are talking with both county and city about what other options there might be. No options have been selected, no options have been put forward, but they are being discussed. In terms of timetable, that again is still a little bit of a moving feast, but the county council, I believe in conjunction with Rutland and the city, have expressed the potential to be going forward under what's known as Pathway 2, which is for areas that need to do local government reorganisation to unlock devolution. So that could be prospective proposals to government in March and final proposals potentially in May. So quite a tight time frame to get from where we are now to proposals into the government. So I think that's broadly the headlines. In terms of next steps, I'll just touch on the recommendations as well. Districts and boroughs have written to the minister, so that's something important to note, which sets out that we do want to be engaged in the process and do want to have the opportunity to submit proposals. And obviously we need to see what comes back from the government in the form of a letter to be sure that we're responding in accordance with whatever it is that they're looking for. In terms of recommendations, as you can see, it seeks to delegate some authority to myself and the leader to talk with other areas around both the Devo element and the local government reorganisation element. Notes the government's intention to create unitary authorities in place at county, districts and boroughs. And also releases £50,000 from the reinvestment reserve to help support work that's going to be inevitably required to propose and develop proposals for the government. So clearly we need to come back to Cabinet and Council in due course, but I think that probably gives you a bit of a summary of some of the issues arising. Clearly happy to take questions alongside the leader.
Thank you, I think that was a good summary. I've got a couple of questions of clarity and then I guess a few thoughts after that. First clarity question is in relation, you've kind of covered it, but I just kind of want it cleared up a little bit in my mind. So the difference between the county combined authority and the mayoral strategic authority. So my understanding is the County Combined Authority is unitary, basically a giant county council, but it swallows up all of the districts into that. Parishes would still stay the same?
So I think there's some subtleties here. So a county combined authority, I think, would be in the instance where there was no mayoral strategic authority. So it would form a level of strategic authority. So I think if you had a county combined authority, you would still have some form of local government reorganisation under that, be in the form of a single county or expanded city and county or whatever it might look like. And I don't think the government will be supportive of that, because they want to see strategic authorities covering more than county areas where they can. It might be permissible. So essentially you're right, but I don't think it will be something that will be able to be worked through in terms of a proposal to government.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that
you would advocate at all.
No, I understand. But I'm just trying to understand it in my mind. Yeah, understood. And then so the strategic mayoral authority is like us trying to be a small Greater Manchester or those ideas. So a larger expanse would be all of Leicestershire and the city and Rutland all together, with a mayor that would be able to combine, you know, transport links and all of those things that we see in those bigger cities happening. West Midlands has it. But then underneath that strategic mayoral authority, we would then have still councils as such, whatever the form of that ended up being. So in Manchester, it's like they've got Rochdale and Oldham, and they still have councils that sit under the Greater Manchester Authority, don't they? Is that, I'm understanding that correct?
You are understanding that correctly, okay. Yes.
So that's fine, I wanted to get that kind of kicked off first, so I kind of understood where we were. Next question is to do with funding. So we talk a lot about how Leicestershire is sort of particularly underfunded, and it's to do with how formulas work, etc., from government. Do we think moving to the mayoral strategic authority would improve our situation financially compared to where we are now? It's a sort of finger in the air thing, but it just crossed my mind as we were going through it.
No. The short answer, no would be, because obviously government are funding local authorities through their formula. It won't displace or bring in any newer money.
Okay, so the idea of the formula would stay similar.
Similar. They might have a reorganisation of the formula to see which councils get which authority get an amount, and I think they've said they're going to have that in 2026-27 going forward. However, the feedback we've got received is that the funding streams will move to the upper tier authority where they are delivering, and then the unitary councils underneath would deliver the day-to-day services. But whatever we receive now would, in essence, be passported over to the new unitary authority.
Okay. If I may chair, just add that the new mayoral strategic authority will have the ability to preset. Mm. So the new strategic authority will be able to preset in terms of raising money. It will also, as the leader said, get passported money by the government. As you described in your earlier question, it will then have responsibility for things like strategic transport, with the unitary authorities underneath still responsible for things like adult social care, etc., etc. And that's where the funding review needs to come in to decide what funding they get. But this new process, I think, whilst there's a lot of talk about efficiencies and things, it is not going to solve the local government funding crisis in and of itself.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess it's just from my perspective a couple of thoughts. I like the idea of the mayoral strategic authority. I like the idea of us being able to look at Leicestershire as a whole, including the city, and particularly from a transport perspective, how we move around, being able to, you know, the city do their thing that's just the city, and then we're kind of just on the outskirts, and sometimes we get invited into things like that and sometimes we don't, and to be able to look at a much wider area. And I think we could make transport much more efficient if it was looked at on a larger scope. So from that perspective, I kind of think that there are some, definitely some benefits from doing it, and if there are some efficiencies over a longer period of time, then that would help. My concern, I guess, is the local side of local council. It's how we maintain the local element of what we do. That was kind of something that crossed my mind. We're looking at things from really big picture and can see some advantages problems with doing that, but also actually our residents, they want to talk to us, they want to know who we are from a councillor perspective and from coming into the council and being able to get help from officers on things and being able to access that locally is really important. So I want us to bear that in mind. I know that you do already. That was just kind of the things that crossed my mind as I was going through the paper. Right. Okay. Who else wants to? If we go to Councillor Harper Davis and then Councillor Lenny.
Thank you, Chair. I think this is probably the most profound paper I've ever read in my life. I think it's peppered with statements. And when you think about what we provide as Charmborough Council and what's actually written in the paper, several statements allude to certain elements which are so untruthed, and they're not truths by Charmborough Council. And I couldn't see any references whatsoever of the evidence behind this paper. I looked at the references, I couldn't find one where we look at the whole evidence of the whole country. It's there's reports underneath there, but some reports 2021, but there isn't anything is evidenced. I mean, I was really cross ones, really, to be quite honest, because it's just, we can work with evidence, but we can't work with peppered, profound statements, for example. It's like, you know, as a mayor or working with the mayor, I think it's working hand in hand with officers, because mayoral strategic authorities will always have to work with officers, because officers lead and guide us as members and the mayor as well. But some of the quotes, like, quote, unitary councils can lead to better outcomes for residents, save money. I'd like to know where the proof is for that, and that's on page 27. And it says, page 27 again, local government I can't remember I've written so quickly. Apparently, some councils, or they allude to councils being mismanaged and not making decisions. How can a paper which applies to the whole UK apply to us as a council? And it says, page 31, quote, many people feel like they don't have control of the things that matter to them. I think we're quite a consultative council, and we're all proud of that. Page 32, public services are on their knees. I'd like to know the evidence behind that. Page 33, devolution gives communities a greater say. Where's the evidence behind that? How will it be done? The role of district councils in all areas of two tiers of local government before moving to a single tier. At the end of the day, if it isn't broken, why fix it? I can understand if it's going to help from a funding perspective, fantastic, but if it's not going to help from a funding perspective, how will it ultimately help our residents? It says, Council, page 108, councils need to be empowered to take difficult decisions to drive growth and improve service. I can't concur with that whatsoever, because we provide excellent services, and I don't see how moving to a different form of delivery of services will change that. The last one that I picked up was page 113, every council must be legal and decent. And I just think that's so profound. How can you allude to councils that we must be legal and decent? We're led by professional strategic officers in a law-abiding government. And it's just, for me personally, I totally agree with, you know, working together, we collaborate, we work with other partners as well. If something isn't broken, I don't believe we should fix it. So I wouldn't be voting for it. So I've got a lot of my chest now. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I'm happy to defer to officers for the officer perspective, but the political perspective, I think what you have to understand is that most of the devolution paper is regarding the mayoral authority. So what will happen is most of that reference is to a directly elected mayor that people have elected. For example, let's take Andy Burnham as an example. He could be the best influence mayor, but the Andy Burnham that they can recognise and that they can hold accountable. And I think that's most of the messaging regarding that. Regarding the other aspects of it, working together, we do that already. However, what they found is that a lot of councils, and this is where the size aspects of it come in, so you would have seen £350,000, £500,000 population size, alluded to in the paper that we reported. That's what, half a million is what the size of a unitary, minimum unitary size, I think ministers are looking at. because they think the size will be make the councils more robust going forward. Because if you look at adult social care, children's services, these are councils, these are big ticket items that sometimes might be able to overwhelm councils. So what they're thinking is that if there are bigger unitaries, they might be able to absorb those shocks. The other aspect of it is just simplifying it. So if you're putting the mayoral authority in, you want to probably simplify the structures underneath it. So for example, if we didn't simplify the structures underneath it, you'll have a mayoral authority, you'll have the county council, then you'll have the district councils. And I think that's too many layers of accountability there for our residents. So in essence, they've looked at the 21 areas where there are two-tier councils, and they thought, actually, if unitary works for the rest of the country, maybe this is what we need to, as well as doing the mayoral thing, take this opportunity to look at those and ask them to merge in essence or reconfigure. It's not compulsory, they haven't asked anybody to do it compulsory. However, if you want to unlock the benefits of devolution, they're saying that this must be done as well, and that's where we are. So in Leicestershire, all the councils have got together. County Council later than would have liked, but we've discussed this knowing that it was coming down the road, and we thought, actually, in Leicestershire, what would be the best course of action if we have to do it? So we've agreed on the Mayor LLR for the Mayor, and then what we're now going to negotiate going forward is what the structure underneath looks like, and how Charnwood fits into that new structure. So yes, it's a new world, and I can understand when you read the report it's frustrating, because we are a good council, we deliver good services, but sometimes I think what they're looking at is the resilience of other councils maybe around us, and potentially saying, actually, if you had a bigger council, you may be a bit more resilient. People can argue, is there an evidence against that one? We know in Northamptonshire they've reorganised, and potentially one of the unitary councils was falling on hard times, hence they put in this population figure of 500,000. We have further clarification that they are, on a case-by-case, will accept lower population figures, and that's what we're working towards as well to put our proposals forward.
Can I just ask a question just on your point there? So when they're saying the population size of 350,000 to 500,000, would that be for the sort of unitaries under the strategic authority? Yes. So they're looking for that kind of number. So we would combine with somebody else to make an authority of 350,000 to 500,000, and then there'd be another combined and another combined that would then sit under the mayoral authority.
Yes,
so is that what
yes.
you're saying there? Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong, just quickly. The mayoral authority is got to be about 1.5 million.
Yeah, yeah.
We're roughly there because you have to forward project population as well. So
yeah,
by the time
doesn't it work out about 1.2?
It's about 1.2, and I think if we forward project to about 2036, we get to about 1.5. What's the sticky plaster is that they've said the authorities underneath them should be around 500,000.
Yeah, got you.
However, we've had further clarification to say that they, 350,000 is acceptable plus is acceptable on a case by case basis, and that's what we're going to be proposing. Sorry, Rob, do you want
to?
No,
I don't think there's anything further to add to that, Lee. I think that's as I understand it.
Councillor Harper Davies, are you finished?
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Councillor Lennie was next. Yeah. Thank you.
The questions that I have are: is this really just trying to achieve economies of scale by removing little district councils?
Yes.
The neutral answer is: I think the government are looking at on a regional basis. They're looking at that actually mayoral authorities have worked, and in their eyes, that's what they want to do.
Have all of them worked though?
In essence, there aren't that many. There's about 7 or 8 at the moment, so there aren't that many to compare against.
Because there's quite a few there. My daughters live in the northy ones, but yeah, all of the south, south and east coast and the shires, isn't it?
So that's what they. Yeah, so by 2028, that's the proposal to have all of them under strategic authorities with the mayor in place.
And you know the financing going forward, is it going to be capped like it is now
for the mayoral authority? No.
Yeah.
No.
So how do they achieve their money then?
Sorry, it's not capped there.
So it's not part of the council tax then?
It will be council tax, but they're not capped. You know, we are capped for 1.99% or 2-3%.
Yeah.
They won't have a cap on their precept for the mayoral authorities.
Ah.
So So they can raise it 10%, 15%, 20%. I'm not saying that they will.
Will any of it be shunted our way?
No, it'll go to the mayoral authority. So that'll be.
And are we effectively an arm? Are all the services going to come through the districts as well as the mayoral authority?
No. So the mayoral authority, like county and districts have now, they'll have their own strategic things that they have to do. So transport is one of them, buses is another one, trains will be one. They'll have access to the health service as well. So they'll have all the bigger strategic things that they can talk with other mayors about. For example, how, like the M1 corridor, for example, if it needs expanding, they'll be able to talk to the East Midlands mayor. So they'll have that strategic look. The authorities underneath will have the delivery arm of it, so they'll be doing the day-to-day. And because they'll be unitary, they'll be doing adult social care, they'll basically do everything that the county does and districts do together, subject to whatever gets passported
up.
Those unitary councils will still have a council tax cap unless that changes.
Mm. And that'll include your social care for adults and children, will it?
Yes,
they'll have their capping for that, and then there'll be the other capping perhaps. So whether the some of this is not entirely clear, so I think it's a good question.
And if the more established ones, and I'm thinking probably, is Tees Valley the most established one?
Manchester's probably the most established, I think.
Right. Because I was thinking, how could we find out about how it's going and the pitfalls that they avoided or fell into while they were going through the process?
So there's quite a lot of evidence around the creation of the mayoral authorities that have been created, like Manchester, and there's quite a lot of information that the government has on that and just generally in the sector about what they did. And obviously we've got the most recent example of the East Midlands Combined Authority, where they've just set up a new mayor office there. So we know reasonably well about that. It is also fairly well documented in other parts of the country where councils have been merged or created as new unitaries. So there's quite a lot of information already out there, Councillor Lenny, about what has worked well or what happens. The government has changed some of the framework, so there are some new elements of it that have not been done before, but I think there's a fairly well-worn path towards creating a mayor's office and the new structures around that, and creating that. And there's also a fairly well-worn path towards local government reorganisation with various different legal routes to that and processes associated with it. So I think the issue around council tax is interesting. So if you imagine the Manchester one, you would have a new mayor there who could potentially drive a council tax receipt, but you also have your councils charging council tax as well. So the Leicestershire model going forward, you would have a mayor and then you would have the councils underneath, and that would all potentially be fed through from council tax plus whatever money is coming in from government. So not that different really from what we have now, just different people doing the precepting.
Right.
The other thing on council tax though is that there will need to be some equalisation. So when you have unitary authorities, council tax gets equalised. So areas that currently pay less might pay more, those that pay more might pay less, because you have to come up with one charging structure for that area.
Mm. And this theory that by having a larger population under each council will make it seem like your poor financial management will be seen differently. Why would that be?
It's not to do with financial management. The minister actually explained this. It's to do with shock. So, for example, say you get a shock in your council, financial shock, you're more likely to be able to absorb that by moving money from other pots into that area to absorb that shock, rather than going under and doing a section 114.
Is that the case in Northamptonshire then?
I think they're a smaller unitary, but that's why they've said half a million is what population wise they're looking at to be able to move money through that authority.
Was their financial problem anything to do with a shock, or was it just poor management?
I think they call it financial shock, but how that financial shock came about, it's up to that authority auditors to investigate.
See, it's all very difficult to. You want to believe that it's going to work out all right, but in reality, you don't know. And we could be in the same position in 10 years' time and somebody say, oh, you know, it were a good idea when we started, but now it's not.
Yeah. There will be some unitaries that have been created and are working quite well and are financially sustainable. Then there'll be others, like Somerset, that was created in the early 2000s, within its first year was struggling on the edge of bankruptcy and has just had to apply for special measures to the government. The drivers of that are really around what their financial income is from council tax and other sources and their social care costs. So whatever new councils are created for Leicestershire, we need to try and make sure that they are financially sustainable. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that is necessarily just driven by their size, that is driven by the demand on their services and their income and the funding formula they get from government. And the bigger question for government, which they are looking at around adult social care, is what do you do with the national problem of adult social care and the cost that that's driving into local authorities? And until that's solved, this is just moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic, because you know it does not solve it. So I think, you know, by merging councils, you'll lose officers, you might make some savings, but it will not be enough to head off the, what's the county's current MTFO, 80 million shortfall?
Yeah.
So, you know, one, even moving to one single council would not save you 80 million a year recurring, so they've still got a shortfall. What people might argue is, well, let's do that as well because it is more efficient. Part of the consideration then needs to be, well, what do you lose in terms of local connectivity, and what other things don't get done at a local level because things are being spent or focused on the bigger problems of adult social care and children. So there is, you know, there is no perfect answer to this conundrum.
No. Okay, I think I'll leave it there.
I hope that was helpful.
Councillor
Neil,
the same
question
you've been.
Sure.
Thank you. I'd missed that bit about the mayor's precept wouldn't be capped. That's interesting. I agree with them, Councillor Harper Davis, on a lot of those points. I don't think that there's any real evidence to say that this will be more efficient or that it will save money at all. In fact, I was reading an article yesterday by somebody, Copus. It's very good. Yep, that's it. Colin Copus. Whole article about how actually there isn't any evidence in here about that it will actually save any money. So I'm really sceptical about that. I'm also of the opinion that I think other members have expressed that I don't really understand how moving local government further away from people and making it more distant gives them a greater say. But I do realise that this is happening and we do need to be realistic about it. So if that is the case, you know, just I would prefer the smaller unitary authorities that sit under this mayor rule. I do have questions. So there's just a really simple one, well it might not be simple, you mentioned the letter back from government, Rob, about the proposals that have been put forward. Do we know when that will come back?
So the government has asked for people to postpone their, if they want to postpone their elections, to apply by the 10th, so that's gone in. County Council have proposed that. And also about whether people want to be on the priority programme. So we should hear by the end of the month whether that has been approved or not.
Right.
We should also, by the end of the month, get a letter alongside every other local authority in the mix, which is all those ones within the county areas, about proposals for putting in proposals for local government audit. So by the end of the month, we should be clearer on the timetable and the direction.
Okay, thank you. The second one, really, is really, really simple. Given how complicated this is and how many unanswered questions there are and how... just how difficult this is going to be, what's the rush? Why is it being pushed through so quickly?
Right, can I there is no rush from the districts. You'll be happy to know, unfortunately, the rush has come from the county council. So the county council have asked for it to go into the priority, which means they think the mayoral authority will be ready for next year, 2026, so we could have shadow elections for the mayoral authority for 2026. Because the government will only delay the elections by a year, they've stated that clearly. However, then that means that we would then have to get everything ready for 2027. Our proposal, if we are given the time, it's one of the recommendations is to have everything ready for 2027 or 2028 potentially, because 2028 is a good year because the Police and Crime Commissioner election is in that year, and that's going to be wrapped up into to the mayor's role. So there is no rush in this regard, but sometimes we're not the driver of the timetable. It's the county, the upper tier authority, in this case the County Council, City Council and Rutland.
Okay. My direct, that wasn't so much directed at us as a district, that was directed more as the government, because one could argue that the county is asked to go to the priority programme because they're being told that's a good thing to do by government. So I'm just wondering, given that this is so big, so complex, so important, I'm just wondering why the government's trying to drive it so fast.
Again, the government has said they're not expecting everybody to put forward proposals. I think there's 21 areas, and they're expecting half of them to put forward proposals, but they're only asking people who are ready to put forward proposals. Their timetable, the government's timetable, to get all this done by April 2028. So there is a driver to get it done by 2028. However, they are expecting half of the councils to go in the first tranche, and county have decided to go in the first tranche. Decided to go, I'm not saying that they've been accepted yet, but that's what they've decided and that's the proposal they've put forward.
Okay. The other one, because again, some things just genuinely aren't very clear to me. In the recommendations about delegating to the leader and chief exec to do certain things, I understand why that needs to be done and that you need to be being agile and things like that. But I am wondering what sort of things are going to be coming back to Cabinet and Council, because it's obviously all the members are going to be, you know, really invested in this. You know, we're all going to have opinions. You know, we all want what's best for our communities. So I'm just wondering how much of it is actually coming back to us as members, scrutiny bodies, council.
You want me to go first? Yeah. So my expectation would be that before the next round of sort of scrutiny, Cabinet and Council, there'll be a lot of sort of shuttle diplomacy between us and other districts, and there'll be some evidence prepared and business cases prepared. But I would imagine that we will need to bring a final position, which includes, you know, this is the proposal being put forward by X districts, whoever else is involved in that, to government. So depending on when the timetables for that are and what the exact sequence is, that could be one prior to the March submission to government or before the May submission. So the absolute backstop is whatever goes in May would need to go through this full gamut of scrutiny, Cabinet and Council. It may well be that, providing there is timescales and a need, that even the interim sort of proposal in March does a similar thing. But we have to be mindful that there is some really tight timescales. I have asked colleagues, so Karen and Sally and others are looking at what meetings we have. If we need to have extraordinary meetings, then so be it. So we'll try and make sure that certainly any final proposal that goes to government has been clearly seen and commented on. We'd like to try and find ways during the proposal to actually do some more consultation with parishes, yourselves, others, about, you know, this is what we're thinking of doing, trying to bring people with us. But time isn't really on our side if we have to get things done, because if it's a March submission, then, you know, that's really sort of 6-8 weeks, isn't it, really, in terms of the cycling, getting reports written and everything else. So it makes it very tight. So I think what we'll try and do is keep everybody with us and updated and make sure that things come through the right governance, for sure. But it is tight.
I just want to add to that we haven't just started this process. We got tipped off is probably the wrong word, but we knew it was coming down the track quite a few months ago. So we've tasked officers to do some background work already and get some facts and figures. So should we be in a position to make some decisions, we will have the facts and figures to make those. And we've done that, and I think we've shared it with other districts as well, because we're ahead of the curve on this one a bit. However, now it's come to the crunch. It is literally about negotiation now, and if we are going to look at smaller unitaries below the mayoral authority, how does that shape look like, and is it an east-west or a north-south, and the extension of the city boundary, you know, how does that look like? Not saying that anything's been agreed at this moment, nothing has been. We've literally just agreed to go ahead with the LLR, and everybody was happy with that one. So the next step, and that's why some of the recommendations are there, that once we're in those meetings, that's where the negotiations will happen. It will come back to scrutiny, cabinet, and then council. Council will make the ultimate decision, by the way, and then we will then take it forward. But as Rob says, with March is just around the corner, literally. I've got budget before that as well, and then May is literally a few 8 weeks after that, so we are up against it. And in that time, we would have to negotiate it not just with our neighbouring districts, but the whole of Leicestershire and the city as well, to be able to get a resolution in front of you.
Can I just come back on that when it comes to you in 1 second? You said it's going to go to full council for a vote. What happens if it gets voted down?
Well, we'll have to cross that bridge when it comes to it. So hopefully
something crazy might happen.
Yeah, we'll come with a proposal that hopefully everybody can agree, because everybody will have a look at. But if it gets voted down, then we'll have to come back with another solution.
It'd be an interesting conundrum that, because I think what we're hoping obviously is to coordinate an agreed approach with other districts, Rutland, and as many councils as we can get to agree, really. So we need to not only get approval through our processes, but all of them will need to do that as well. As I understand it, there's nothing to stop us if we had a single proposal putting it in, but I think it would be less strong. So I think if Charnwood didn't agree the proposal, then whatever did go in from the others that had agreed it would be less strong, mm-hmm. because Charnwood aren't in it. And the same would be true if we were the only ones to approve it and the others didn't. But you can only go with the coalition of the willing, can't you? So it could be that some councils don't agree, and you know, we've got one, two differing proposals going in, which I think is quite likely at the moment. But you don't want to see three, four or five proposals going in, because that really does make us look quite dysfunctional.
The minister has reserved the right to impose as well.
Yeah, we discussed that before the meeting, very briefly.
They said that if there's proposals going forward and there's one particular district that doesn't want to play ball, then they're not going on with that.
We can't veto, in essence.
So in that regards, if we can't accept a proposal, we might just be put into a formula that isn't of our choosing.
Can you have a strategic mayoral authority with a unitary underneath it with a mayor? So essentially two mayors.
There's no reason why you couldn't. Because
as in, can Leicester stay as it is and still have a strategic mayoral authority?
Yes, they can.
Councillor Rees Corrie-Losley, you've been waiting very patiently.
Thank you, Chair. So most of what I was going to say has been covered by the councillors, I think, which is good. But just to come back on a point a few others made, you know, I agree that evidence is important, and you know, I'm really proud of what Charnwood does, and some of the things in there definitely don't apply to us, I don't think. We do a pretty good job. That said, while I'm relatively speaking quite new to all this, and I've always worked in the private sector, one of the things that I found most frustrating hasn't been anything to do with Charnwood or officers or the way we work. It's all been really good. It's where you come up against institutional boundaries, where you have to interact with other bodies, other authorities that are outside of the council, and it becomes a really messy process. I mean, when you go out and speak to residents about the council, it's rare that anyone has a good understanding of which council does what. And there's nothing more frustrating than a district-only councillor trying to do county casework, because you just can't really help people. So I think there is some benefit in having a streamlined approach to this. I think maybe the county's proposal is a little too much on that direction, but you know, smaller unitaries I think are the smart choice really here. I think it will be beneficial in the long run, albeit a little bit scary and painful in the meantime. Change is frightening. So most of the questions of clarity have been cleared up, but there are a few other bits that I wanted to go over. I think Rob, you touched on this, but just to confirm, on page 7, just after the bullet points, first paragraph says, "The white paper restates government's ambition that all areas will ultimately have a mayoral strategic authority. In two-tier areas, government will only establish CCAs for an interim period." So does that mean if we were in a position where we went to, say, like a East Leicestershire unitary, and for whatever reason the mayoral authority wasn't set up yet, they would temporarily have that strategic mayoral power up until such time that a mayor was established? Is that correct?
So
just a temporary state of being, there's no such thing as a...
I think there'll be very, very few what's known there as foundation state strategic authorities, which is your sort of CCA's interim period. I think everybody in the country, as far as I can see, is saying, right, well, the writing's on the wall, you want us to get to mayoral strategic authorities, we'll go there. But I suppose, theoretically, based on this paper, you could have a situation where there was no agreement for a mayoral strategic authority in Leicestershire between the upper tier authorities, and therefore there was an opportunity for the county to have a single area county combined authority. But that isn't what's being proposed by the county or the city or Rutland or the districts. So I think it's probably not going to happen, but theoretically that's, I believe that's what that could mean.
All right, cool. That's, that makes sense. Page 8. It mentions that this reorganisation about halfway down the page, first bullet point, council could be reorganised over this parliament and the next. Well, the next parliament's, you know, there might not be an election until 2029. Is there any, you know, we've talked about how quickly a government and county and whoever else wants to move on this, but is there scope for this to drag on until into the 2030s? That's a bit alarming.
I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer that question. my local experience suggests yes, that's entirely possible. To be frank, I think the government's ambition is to do things quickly, and to some degree, if you're going to do it, don't hang about, do it, because uncertainty is not helpful, and neither is a long, drawn-out process, but equally, rushing is not helpful, and not having time to develop the right proposals is not helpful. So there is a midpoint. There's also... It'll be interesting to see how MHCLG, is, you know, as a group of civil servants, copes with all of this work, because there will be a huge amount of work for government to manage. And, you know, you think about just bringing in revs and bens into this council. You imagine trying to take all of those different, you know, waste contracts, leisure contract, and create one or two new councils. It will be a lot of work. And the ones that have been set up tend to start at the top and then work down over a period of years. So the Northamptonshire councils we described are still not fully integrated, are still arguing over the debts. So even if the first part's done, this will have a legacy for 10 years, no doubt.
Could get a bit sticky then.
It will be, as you described, there will be some difficulties for quite a period of time, but they can be overcome, as somebody's, the LGR, Local Government Reorganisation Unitary, has happened, and it can be managed, but it will create lots of associated work which has implications.
Mm. Okay. All right, thank you. And then, lastly, I think, yes. Page 9, it mentions our strong financial track record, which we're about to hear about the next item, that we generally do pretty well when it comes to financials for a local authority. If we were in a situation, I don't know the financial outlook for other councils that we may or may not be partnering with to form a unitary, but if they have a poorer financial situation than Charnwood does, and the accounts get, maybe this is a bit of a granular level of detail of how early on we are in this, but is it possible that residents of Charnwood who have a pretty good financial outlook at the moment might lose out if we're going to an authority with someone who's a little bit less solvent than we are?
Theoretically, yes. And like I said, there's all sorts of issues here, because there will need to be council tax equalisation, but there again, you know, there'll be business rates and other things that will feed into that, and there's a government review of finances going on anyway, so it's difficult to know exactly what the financial picture will look like. I think I don't think there's anything particularly to worry. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff like debt apportionment as well. I don't think it's on its own a sort of as a deal breaker issue that can the financial sustainability will need to be teased out of whatever new organisations are put in place.
All right, thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Councillor Seaton, is there anything you want to
No, I mean, I went through this process with a different hat on 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, so where different authorities were interviewed, and weren't they? Some that were successful, some not so successful. And it was clear from there that was the county's view of pushing it through, although at that time none of the districts were with them. It seems as though they are now, until you look at something else and they're not. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what gossip or tweet to listen to at the time. So I just find it very interesting how... This is huge. It's huge. It's vast. And then when you try and explain it, or the press or reporters try to explain it to the public, and there was one yesterday, it made me laugh, cupcakes. and having grass cutting potholes written on each cupcake and saying, well, is this with the district or the... That is being sold to the public. It's being sold to the public that this whole thing will just reorganise grass cutting. You'll just have to go to one person to complain about grass cutting, another person about potholes, and it's being sold to the public as that. And it's not, it's huge, and huge implications. And if it goes bottoms up, then it's a hell of a ship to turn around, isn't it? So in that 10 years time, which I won't be, I'll be here, but I'm not here, I probably won't have to worry about, but I do worry about it, because it's a hell of a ship to turn around. And once something big is in the
process,
a mess.
I think that's the challenge. I think that's a challenge for all of the local authorities that are going to face this one. The difference between 4 years ago and now was the County Council was driving it to see if we could get level three agreement.
Yes.
However, what the difference is now, it's the government driving it to say, actually, we want everybody to be in a mayoral authority. So that's going to be a given. If you don't go into one, we'll impose one on you, because that's it clearly in the, written in the paper. And then we want some form of reorganisation for tier councils. They're not asking anybody else to reform. They've touched on the smaller unitaries. If they're in trouble, then they'll be able to tag along in this reorganisation, as they say. Rutland, for example, is a unitary in its own right. However, it's taken this opportunity, if it can, come in with one of the Leicestershire unitaries. The reason being is, obviously, if you're a standalone unitary of 40,000 people, you are very much exposed to those shifting sands of adult social care, and also children's social services as well. Children's social care, that's expensive as well. So it's one of those where, actually, if there is an opportunity, they've taken the opportunity to come with us if it's right for them. If it's not right for them, they may look elsewhere, but at this moment in time, they are looking at the smaller unitary models, not the county unitary models, with the districts, and that's positive for us.
Councillor, please.
Thank you. I think the saddest part about this are residents who it's going to be most impactful for will not be consulted. And surprisingly enough, I had an email from one of our husband and wife in Mount Sorrel, and I'll read it to you. Dear councillors, I am emailing you both to express my total agreement with the concerns raised in the emailed CBC bulletin titled Local Leaders Express Serious Concerns About Single Unitary Council Proposal for Leicestershire. The statement is issued by LCC, shows total disrespect and disregard for our existing local government bodies and councillors. This is an example of the attitude we might expect should such a body be imposed upon us, and it's unacceptable. And he goes on, I won't read that, but I think that says it all, really, regarding what our, you know, how it's going to affect our, the perception of the effect that this change will bring to our residents.
Yeah, there will be 4 or 5 years of change, immediate change, because we'll be working on this proposal for at least the next year and a half, and then integration, if, should it go ahead, the integration, and then everything that comes after that. So when Rob said it's going to take a decade long process, yeah, it probably is going to take a decade long process. The challenge for us, though, is as councillors and local leaders, is to make that as pain-free as possible for our residents, and that will be the challenge, because even if we go with the smaller unitary models, there will still be two brand new councils made out of 6 districts or 7 districts. So it'll be changed for everybody around. It's just not the name of the council that's going to change. It is going to be a wholesale change, but we've got to make the best of it, because we're being asked to do this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Councillor Taylor and see if he wants to add anything to what we've discussed.
No, not at this stage. I think it's obviously a massive thing, and I think there's so many questions, and there's so many. Or so little answers at the minute. I think we could be here all night, to be honest. So, nothing from me.
Yeah, thank you. I think we've probably talked through as much as we can talk through today. Are we all comfortable with the recommendations that are in there at the moment?
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing for me was it's going to be worked through and those proposals are going to go to Cabinet. At that point, we can call it into scrutiny again to have a look at it once there's something a little bit more solid to look at. So I think, certainly from my perspective, I think I'm comfortable with the recommendations that are down there at the moment. Is everybody else happy with the recommendations?
Yeah, happy to support, Chair.
Yeah, we can do, really.
Councillor Taylor, are you happy with the recommendations and the report?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so we're all in agreement with that. So,
happy with that to be proposed. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
See you all later. Have a great rest of the meeting.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. See
you later. Okay, so we move on to item eight. Thank you. Pre-decision scrutiny, Cabinet response. So if I can go to our Democratic Services Officer, so Sally Watson's going to take us through this one.
Thank you, Chair. So this is a report of the Cabinet setting out its responses to recommendations of the Scrutiny Commission on pre-decision scrutiny items. So the report's just to note. It basically outlines what happened at Cabinet after we scrutinised those items. So, not to confirm that it's noted, Chair.
Yep, noted, thank you. Does everyone see that report?
Yeah.
Fine. Thanks, Sally. Let's move to item nine. So, we've got the scrutiny panel. So, we go to Sally again.
Yep, so this is a report of the Head of Democracy to consider updates on the work of scrutiny panels. So, we've obviously got the Budget Scrutiny Panel report, which is the next item on the agenda, so we won't touch on that yet. That panel's finished. The Flooding Scrutiny Panel, we've obviously got the chair of that panel here. The final meeting was scheduled for next week, but we've had to cancel that meeting. So we will look at reprogramming that final meeting as a matter of priority. I don't know if the chair of that panel wants to say anything.
Yes, thank you, Sally. We had two more meetings, Sally, because we added one on for the final recommendation. So we were hoping to get the recommendation into place tomorrow. Unfortunately, due to capacity and damn services, we weren't able to do that. So what I propose when the officer is back, to put some dates in for February, and still go ahead with a March meeting for the final recommendation. So I was just unfortunate, and also we've had more flooding as well, so that just keeps everything on the radar. So
yeah, that's what we just mentioned briefly before.
Yeah, DEM services capacity wise by March, a very early March.
Do you think the recommendations that are coming through are going to, I guess,
let's hope they make more impact than they did last time.
Yeah,
I think with the water, with the rain coming down as it is on a more regular basis, because the climate change, it's only going to get worse. But I think as time goes by, you just realise, you know, we've obviously discussed recommendations, we've gone along the line. But I think I think people just have to build more resilient houses in areas that flood. So it's been a great panel. It's been going on for a year now, but I can't really believe how quickly it's gone. So hopefully by March we'll have some recommendations. And all we can do is ask to be considered, but in no uncertain terms, I've chatted with the officers at LCC actually, everyone, that something needs to be done. You know, we act as, you know, I am biased because of Charnwood, but it's not just us, it's partners as well. So hopefully it'll be fruitful and they'll do something about it this time.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else got any questions on that?
Chair, I just want to say as well, the Housing Needs Scrutiny Panel is still ongoing. I think they've got a few more meetings to get through before they're finished.
Lovely, thank you. So if we move to item 10, which is the Budget Scrutiny Panel. So we've got the Chair of Budget Scrutiny, Councillor Charles, with us. So if you want to join us at the table.
Thank you, Chair.
And if you want to introduce the report for us, please.
Yes. Well, firstly, if I may, I'd like to thank the officers and members that contributed to this panel. It is, I think it is the whirlwind panel of all panels. We start at the end of November and complete in the beginning of January.
Very efficient.
I've
not got no trouble.
No, there is no trouble. It's quite true. The report's there. I can read it out if you wish, or I can simply, you know, if there's any further questions on it, the recommendations of the panel made are there. And it's there for you to review.
Okay, thank you. I mean, I think the most positive thing out of it is that we're actually looking in a better position than we expected to be. So I think for all of us,
we've been very fortunate, I think. I mean, it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but the high interest rates have provided very good income for the council over the last 2 years. But you balance that off against the higher inflation, which is pushing costs up on, you know, building materials, everything. So we are in a fortunate position, and I think there's been several years of quite good financial management that's sort of contributed to quite good reserves, and you know, we are quite in a durable position should, you know, anything untoward happen. So we're quite pleased, and I say there's a few recommendations there that we would like the cabinet to look at ways of creating more income, because at the end of the day, council stands and falls really by the general fund, which is driven by income and control of outlay. So it's quite key that we are always looking at how we can possibly save some money, but also bring more money into the council.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
No. I have some. Thank you. It might not be fair to ask you, Councillor Charles, without offices here. But I had a couple of the related, I think every question at scrutiny now is going to be related to government reorganisation, isn't it? So one, obviously that local government reorganisation, that's going to surely affect our budget setting in future years with so much uncertainty and knowing that we're going to, you know, not really exist as a council by 2028.
Let's just spend it all.
Well, there were two things there really. I was thinking, do you know how this is going to affect it? And you might not, because like I said, we've not got an officer here. But also, you know, next year, do we need to start considering things like setting aside a budget, you know, part of the budget to deal with the costs associated with all of this, you know, or like you said, finding projects that actually where we can actually make some real community impact before we're not here anymore and the money potentially gets down the black hole of social care. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm just thinking ahead one year almost, you know.
Okay, we did raise the questions about potential unitaries and what effect that would have on the budget, but this budget effectively is for the next 12 months.
Yeah.
So realistically, there's going to be costs, but we've no idea of what it was. So even the officers were sort of saying we can't really comment on that at the moment until we have some facts.
Yeah.
Again, with the budget, it's not estimations, it's dealing with factual numbers. Yeah. So we haven't got the figures to give any, you know, any certainty about that. So they really should have shied away from that and put that for another day. So
I did spot in there, though, it said that they might at some point put some caps on reserves or set minimum reserve levels and things like that, and all of the councils considering changes.
Right.
And that was obviously just an officer's suggestion that might be how things go, but I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the finance of the council is really a priority above all else. And so we are in a good strong position. So it would be a shame to see that dissipated by other councils, really, all the hard work that's been done. Mm.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
No.
Councillor Taylor, is anything else? No, you're happy. I've got one question, but just to do with the report, not the details of the report. Previously, when we've had like panels and recommendations, and I don't know if it's between now and it going to cabinet that this bit gets added, I can't remember, but there's usually officers' response to the recommendations. Does that happen between now and cabinet?
Yeah. Okay. So when I if you approve this report, I'll then let the clerk of the budget scrutiny panel know, and she'll liaise with Simon Jackson and Ian Linser his comments against the recommendations. To make sure they're viable.
Yeah, that's it. I just remember with previous ones, we'd kind of seen that, and I wasn't sure if at what point they went in. Thank you.
You didn't really mean comments against the recommendations. Well, you meant by the side.
Yeah, underneath.
So we're all happy for that.
I thought
too.
When you said that. Yeah, you were like,
happy for the report to be sent on to cabinet.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to the panel as well for all the work.
Yes.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, so we move to item 11. So we've got the scrutiny work programme.
Yes, Chair. So this is a report of the Head of Democracy to enable the Scrutiny Commission to review and agree the Scrutiny Work Programme. So you've got the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee Work Programme attached to that item. If you remember at the last meeting, they asked us to add the agency staff cost to our work programme, which we've done, so we'll be looking at that in March. So I don't know if anyone's picked up anything off that work programme.
Councillor Lenny.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Oh, I think I've missed it on the last item. No, I haven't. Yeah, the only thing that concerned me about it was that there's, on the appendix of the meetings, there's, no, it's not that one, it's the plan, isn't it?
It's just the finance and performance bit we're just seeing at the moment.
So it's page 26. Yes.
Did you want to do something before?
It was actually to do with the scrutiny panel procedures, which we seem to have skipped over.
What do you mean?
You know the bit on page 21 where they're sort of saying become more efficient and effective and shorten the scrutiny panel time down?
I know that the scrutiny panel procedures hasn't changed. That goes in every meeting,
right.
Just to explain how the panels
work. It's not
work.
A suggestion as no. to us sort of getting a grip and doing things faster then?
No. Right. That appendix all 2 right is in every meeting. It just right. goes at the end of it just to explain how they work.
Yeah. Okay then.
Carry on.
Okay.
Oh, things are reading. Okay, so I think we're all happy with the finance and performance one, as it is, Sally, with that you've already added in.
Oh, no,
I will note, actually, the appendix to the finance performance scrutiny committee item, it is a little bit out of date just because it hasn't been updated since the last meeting.
Okay.
So it will be updated at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. So we've done that one, so then it's our one. So there's item 12 is the Scrutiny Commission Work Programme, which is our agenda.
That's the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a report of the Head of Democracy setting out the list of forthcoming executive key decisions and the Scrutiny Commission's Work Programme for consideration in order to identify items for key decision scrutiny.
You'd got something, Councillor Mead, haven't you, that you wanted to...
Yeah, we were looking at March, and our agenda looks pretty light, and I'd noticed that the Cabinet are looking at the housing domestic abuse policy in February, which had piqued my interest. I thought that might be something that we might like to look
yeah.
at.
Yeah.
And given that we've not got a heavy agenda, I wondered if we could put that one on.
Yeah, I'll be happy with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we can get that one added, Sally.
Yeah.
Councillor Lenny?
Yeah, there's one poor little thing, the pre-decision scrutiny on the future of sheltered housing accommodation.
That's already on our list.
Yeah, but that's the only one for February.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I think that's been moved to March as well. Right.
The 13th of March.
Right. So will that be okay still from the point of view of doing the abuse?
Well, I would imagine that other things will probably get dropped in between now and then anyway, so...
Might be a bumper one. Right, okay, thank you.
Okay, Sally, I think that's all done. Meeting over. Thank you, everybody.
Ooh, thank you very much.
Next meeting is on the 10th of February.
Pardon?
The 10th of February.
Always the one still.